Dr. Steve Wolf is professor in the departments of medicine and rehab medicine and associate professor in the department of biology at the Emory University School of Medicine. Dr. Wolf is also a senior research scientist at the Atlanta VA Center for Visual and Neurocognitive Rehabilitation. Dr. Wolf, what is your main interest at the Atlanta VA Medical Center?
Well, my interest is in stroke management and creating new interventions to help folks who've had strokes improve their ability to walk better and most recently to use their upper extremities, their arms and hands, better than they were after they've had their stroke.
What are some of the more common problems you've seen in stroke patients?
A lot of times part of the problem is we don't have as much strength in the affected leg. You know, when you've had a stroke, it's the opposite side, the opposite arm and leg that are weakened, and sometimes the muscles don't work together in a coordinated fashion. And to make matters even more complicated, you sometimes lose feeling in your leg or your arm. So the ability to equally distribute one's weight or to bear weight on the affected, the more impaired lower extremity, is compromised. So we're always trying to figure out ways in which we can make people more aware of how they're equilibrating their balance, equal weight on each foot as they take each step, and spend quite a bit of time studying how to do that more effectively.
And how do you get patients to more equally shift their weight and get used to doing it?
Well, there are several ways. Some people give feedback by having patients stand on force plates, and the output from the force plate can be seen as a visual signal that shows how much reaction there is to the ground, to the force that you're placing on each foot. And the goal is to teach someone to weight shift so that they can equally distribute their weight and improve their standing balance. As far as walking is concerned, there are now treadmills that actually have transducers underneath the tread. So you can provide feedback of the amount of weight distribution on each foot as you progress forward. What we tend to do if we've had a stroke, as you might imagine, is spend less time on the affected leg and more time on the unaffected leg. So that creates a disequal gait or walking. And so the goal then is to train someone to spend equal time on each leg. So sensors under a treadmill is one way of doing this. And now more recently, there are split belt treadmills. So you can control the speed of each belt separately. So if we're trying to retrain equal steps, you can slow down the belt of the underneath the affected leg, speed up the belt underneath the unaffected leg. So now you have to be able to spend more time and control the weight that you put on that fast belt with your affected leg. And then we try to see whether a person is walking better when you take them off the split treadmill and transfer that to real life situations.
How did this treatment come about?
There's a lot of work that's been done for many, many decades in animal models of spinal cord injury and stroke, trying to determine, first of all, do we have mechanisms built into our nervous system that allow us to create a pacing, or sometimes called a reciprocity, an opposite relationship between how the muscles work in each leg, or in the case of a cat, hind limb. And we know that's true. So fundamentally, knowing that the machinery is there intact at the spinal cord level, can we retrain in people who've had strokes their brain to make use of these generator patterns in our spinal cord to recalibrate our walking, build upon the infrastructure that's still there by retraining the brain?
Dr. Wolf, please tell us how the ancient martial art of Tai Chi plays into your program.
Well, it's a funny story. Since we were talking about balance already, many years ago, we were very interested in looking at these new balance machines to retrain balance control in older adults who fall. And we thought, okay, if we stand you on these balance machines that could move, called posturography machines, can we show people what their balance looks like, the forces underneath their feet, and retrain them to improve their balance? Compare that to a a control for exercise group. This is a big clinical study. As we were putting this together, a gentleman who happened to be a professor of biochemistry at Emory and a Tai Chi grandmaster came to our working group and he said, I'd like to participate too, but I want you to study Tai Chi. I knew of Tai Chi as a martial arts form, but never knew that it had been an exercise form for Chinese elders practiced for well over 300 years. So he gave me a few books to read, and we decided when we were submitting our idea to have a three-armed, we call it, intervention, a control for exercise, the balance training, and the Tai Chi. So it turned out the Tai Chi was the most potent intervention in the country to delay the onset of falls in older adults. So, question, how does it work? The answer is we really don't know for sure. But what we do know, for folks who fall, there's a lot more to why someone would fall besides having problems with your vision, the muscles or strength, or the sense of balance. Sometimes we think one of the important factors which is underappreciated is our cognition, our ability to think about what we're doing as we're walking. If we can't take into account signals that our eyes see because we're thinking about something else, we can't make the appropriate movements if we see an obstacle in our way. And that may be a cause for falls. I'm telling you that because we think one of the benefits from Tai Chi is that the movements or the movement forms are very slow and very deliberate. There's no instructional sheet, unlike most of what we do in medicine, which tells you each point to follow or step to take. Everything is done in images, and the images are very natural. So what the participants do at any age, but especially important for older adults who fall, is they have a visual image of the movement, the motion. So sometimes call this meditation in motion, because you're thinking about how to move slowly and deliberately. Mm-hmm. So it's the slowness, the deliberateness, which helps to create a greater awareness of how we're moving our bodies. And that awareness, we think, comes into play into everyday activities, which may be one of the reasons why balance training, in this case Tai Chi in particular, is an effective intervention to delay the onset of falls. I say delay the onset of falls because you can't presume that an older adult isn't going to fall again. The question is not you're not going to fall. It's trying to delay the next time until someone does that. And apparently, Tai Chi does this fairly successfully, so well that we have a hard time trying to do Tai Chi studies now because most of the assisted living facilities have their own Tai Chi instructors.
Can veterans take part in this research, and how would they get in?
Well, there are several ongoing projects, both at the VA and at Emory. There are flyers and informational contents available to get a better understanding of which studies they might be able to participate in. And the VA Rehab R&D Center, our Center on Vision and Neurocognitive Rehabilitation, has a website that's available. And on that website, one can have an address to contact and get some information about these various studies.
Why do you think it's important for veterans to take part in this?
Well, I think what we try to do is cutting edge work. And most times there's no charge to do this. So we like to see our participants not as guinea pigs, but as pioneers, folks who are exploring with us novel interventions, new things that we think will help other folks, whether it be falls and older age, strokes and the movement impairments following that. And I think realizing that we don't get to do these studies unless they've already passed peer review, acceptance of the quality of the work we want to do. And people sometimes don't realize that. You just don't come up with an idea and let's find some people and do it. This has to be a bona fide, well-received, highly criticized work before we can undertake it. And so knowing that the volunteers we ask for by making these contacts are engaging in studies which have gone through rigorous review before we ever get to do them is of importance. The notion being we wouldn't fund folks to do this if the reviewers didn't feel this work has a lot of potential for helping other veterans and individuals with disabilities.
Dr. Wolf, please tell us about constraint-induced movement therapy.
Some of the work that we have done in the past and has been now integrated into other studies and into practice involves making patients who've had strokes use their impaired upper extremity arm and hand by immobilizing the better arm and hand for defined periods of time. That immobilization is usually wearing a hand mitt that doesn't allow one to take their better hand and control objects. In conjunction with that, we identify tasks that are meaningful to the stroke survivor so that they begin to break down the movement components contributing to the overall task as they practice either in the clinic and preferably in their home environment. And this is a relatively short but intense intervention, just a few weeks for defined periods of time during the day in which we have negotiated with the patient through a behavioral contract, what they're to do, how long they're to do it. And then we look at the long-term benefits that occur as a result of a relatively short period of time in which they're doing this constraint-induced movement therapy.
So it's as if someone breaks their dominant hand and is forced to use the other one?
Precisely. The tricky thing here is that what if the hand that is impaired because you've had a stroke is your non-dominant hand to begin with? One can easily say, well, I don't use that hand as much anyway. And a lot of the things that I do with both hands at the same time. So what difference is it going to make? Well, we believe that if you can retrain even the non-dominant but impaired upper extremity by isolating and controlling movements in it, it will make the use of both arms more effective. And you always want to be in a position where you can use both arms well even after you've had a stroke that affects your non-dominant upper extremity.
Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today?
There's something that is very important that you and I touched upon earlier. We have to realize that we've had a major injury, or when we're older and we fall, there is no magic pill here. We'd like to think we could take something and the arm, leg's going to be better, or our balance is going to be better. That's simply not true. It takes dedication and hard work on the part of the veteran, the patient, and the trainer, the clinician, the researcher, and working together, we can affect, I think, a far better result than someone taking that responsibility or initiative on their own, because it's hard to do when you've had a major disability following a stroke, a spinal cord injury, or in the aging process where our limbs don't work as well as they had before.
We want to thank Dr. Steve Wolf, Senior Research Scientist at the Atlanta VA Center for Visual and Neurocognitive Rehabilitation, and a professor at Emory University School of Medicine.